Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Before we bring on Brady Henderson of ESPN, Bump, I see this question a ton, so I want to be able to have some answers for listeners. This is not the only listener to ask this question over the last couple days. From the 425, how would you feel about giving up some secondary talent to improve the D-line? Feels like we have a plethora of secondary talent, but need more help up front to stop the run and get some pass rush.
I'm not ready to do that yet. I'm not ready to give up on this experiment. I think Dre Jones got banged up last game. We'll see what happens there. Jay Reed just had his best game. We're still going to see Cam Young go to work. Mario Edwards has not been bad. I think I'm good right now.
Yeah, you know, my only thing would be I totally get where you're coming from, because you do have, when fully healthy, you do have a lot of depth in the secondary compared to guys up front. But unfortunately, those trades aren't super common. Like, player for player trades aren't super common in the NFL. It would probably be giving up a draft pick to try to acquire some help up front from someone. I'm not against the idea of, especially if your offense starts, if your offense is casually dropping 30 points a game and your defense is just getting worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Try to figure out the defense, because I know the 49ers look absolutely amazing, but the conference as a whole is weaker than it's been in years past. Why not still go for it? Why not really try to capitalize if the offense continues to be really solid? But
it's too early.
It's a little too early. You want to see how they look.
We ain't seen them all. We ain't seen everybody all together yet. We've seen Jamal for the first time here. It's just too early. I know people, I understand people's like, they want to panic. They want to say, let's fix this all right now. But sometimes fixing it is letting it marinate a little bit and seeing what Clint and the rest of his staff can do with the guys they have when they have everybody. Now, I don't know when the trade deadline is, but when you get...
Usually it's around Halloween.
When you get to around like week six, you know what I'm saying? 7, 8, and it still isn't working. Then I'm like, all right, let's go. But for right now, I say, man, pump the brakes and let them try to figure it out.
What will you see that makes you feel more comfortable? Like, what stat are you looking at? What player are you looking at? What's something where you're going to go, they're okay. I feel like they're going to be okay.
It's points, passing yards. I mean, just the obvious ones. There's nothing too crazy. We're not going to go into, and on second down against this defense and that, they're playing this. Nah, it's real basic. Can you stop the pass? Can you get after the quarterback? Which I think they gotten better at getting after the quarterback. 11 quarterback hits this past game, 3 sacks, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
There's been progress every single week. And if I didn't see progress, then maybe I'd be more inclined to say, okay, let's do something right now. But no, I see progress, and we still haven't seen everybody out there.
I mean, you need to see progress. Those most points scored through 3 weeks that I mentioned, the two teams on either side of Seattle at number 4, San Francisco and Dallas, you're playing both of those teams, and you're playing them within like a 3-week span of each other. So yes, the defense is going to need to be better, but you've got several weeks until you get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going out there and you're looking at like, where are they going to improve? Where can they be better? Who can be there? That's obviously where we're going to start looking. And one of the guys that are going to be out there for the first time this year, Jamal Adams. Let's bring on ESPN's Brady Henderson to talk about Jamal's return. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Brady, everyone very excited to see Adams out there. How much do you actually expect him to play, though?
Well, thanks for having me, and sorry about the technical difficulties there. I mean, I would have thought in terms of Adam playing for the first time in, 54 weeks, whatever it is, I would have thought that, you'd maybe try to put him on something of a snap count. Now, Pete Carroll was sort of asked something along those lines yesterday, and he said that there's going to be no restrictions on him at all. So it is kind of hard to imagine him playing, 60-plus snaps, but that does sound like what Carroll said is going to be the case. Now, they've had a couple games where I think they've been over 70 snaps, which is even harder to imagine. But Carroll said there's going to be no restrictions on him, so we'll see exactly what that means.
No restrictions. I think on paper that sounds good, but in reality, I think we know they're going to be watching him and making sure that he's good to go. They brought over Julian Love, kind of not to replace him, but fill that void. What have you seen out of Julian so far?
Yeah, it's usually, as you know, Bump, when you're a defensive back and you are ending up with double-digit tackles in a game, that's usually not a good thing, because that means you're getting the ball thrown mm-hmm. your way and you're getting passes completed on you. And you're there to make the tackle. So I thought he was better in the game on Sunday against Carolina than he was in the first two games. He made a nice play on the ball. It just seems like a lot of passes have been completed on him. And I think Love is kind of an interesting player with regards to the bigger picture Adams situation. I mean, they signed him, A, to be a short-term replacement for Adams, knowing that he might not be ready to start the season, which was true. He had to miss the first three games. But, you know, they signed him to a two-year deal, I think, with the thought that, you know, knowing that Adams, you know, was in a make-or-break year this year. And, you know, after this season, that you'd still have to eat quite a bit of dead money. I think it's something like $15 million if they were to move on, but that's something that they may have to do if he has another season like either of the last two. And so Love, I think, was, you know, kind of a long-term replacement option if that was the route they go. And then again, you know, Love hasn't been great these first three games. And so it's early, give him time to settle in and see what he is, but that's going to be a situation to monitor the rest of the season, just because I think there's obviously some long-term uncertainty with Adams beyond this year.
Are you noticing any trends with the passing defense? Because they're currently 31st in yards allowed per game there.
Yeah, that's been the case for a few years now. I think, you know, they've certainly figured out the run defense, and they've been, I think, one of the best run defenses in the NFL. And what's interesting is that, you know, every part of their game through three games has been up and down, you know, whether it's the passing offense, the running game, the pass rush, even the kicking game, it's been up and down. And the pass coverage, I would say, has been up and down. And the run defense has really been the one constant, even though that was the biggest question mark going into the season. So they've been stopping the run. I don't know if you could say that that has come at the expense of their pass defense, because they've actually spent quite a bit of time in nickel, which is sort of counterintuitive to the idea of stopping the run. You feel like, you know, it would seem like all the snaps they've had with five or six defensive backs on the field would put them in better situations, better position to stop the pass, but they've actually been a lot better against the run. I think, you know, when you look at the game on Sunday, you've got to attribute some of those, you know, 300 plus passing yards to the fact that Andy Dalton threw it 58 times. And if a quarterback is anywhere near that high in terms of attempts per game, then you know, you got to figure you're going to be over 300 yards. And so that that was part of the reason why they, you know, they only allowed 44 rushing yards, was because I think Carolina only attempted 14 rushing plays, and two of them were Andy Dalton scrambles. So, you know, the jury is still out, I think, on this defense in general, how well they can stop the pass. But the run defense has been pretty solid so far.
So there's been a lot of hype about JSN coming in and contributing in a big way. Me personally, I didn't expect too much. I said around 35, 40 catches, maybe 300 to 400 yards. I got people texting me in talking about, oh, what are they doing? Why aren't they using him? And I go, look, he's third on the team with 14 targets. He's got 9 catches for 57 yards. That's probably what we're going to see out of him. Maybe have a big game to where he does something a bit special. Are you concerned about JSN and how they're using him?
No, because I think in the game on Sunday, I think a big part of that was the fact that they just relied a lot more on multiple tight end sets, and I would assume that that was done in part to help out the tackles in pass protection, knowing that you're going to need an extra blocker there to help out your backup left tackle and your backup right tackle. And so just looking at the snap counts, that was a season low percentage for JSN. I think it was like under 50%. And they did a lot, like both of the tight ends, Fant and Parkinson, both played more snaps than him. So I would attribute some of that to the fact that he just wasn't on the field as much on Sunday. Now, that wasn't really the case the week before in Detroit, and he had a nice game there with, can't remember what it was, 5 or 6 catches. So I'm with you. I mean, I think you had to keep expectations realistic for him going into the season, knowing that, A, he's a rookie wide receiver, and there's, you know, the learning curve there. B, he's playing in a run-heavy offense, so there's just not going to be a ton of targets to go around. And he's the third receiver behind two guys that, you know, are going to be threats to get 1,000 yards. And so I always looked at like a good benchmark for him would be kind of what Tyler Lockett did as a rookie in 2015, because he was sort of in a similar situation there. And I think he ended up with like, you know, 40, 50 catches, 600 yards, and 4 or 5 touchdowns. So I think that's still entirely within reach for Jackson Smith and Jigba, and I wouldn't be too concerned about what happened Sunday, because I think that was as much about usage than anything else.
Shane Waldron entering another year as offensive coordinator here in Seattle, and he had some high praise during the preseason among the top 5 or 6 offensive coordinators from Pro Football Focus. What have you liked from him so far?
Yeah, I like that they have, you know, fought through the difficult situation of losing both their tackles. And, you know, I did not see that game in Detroit going that way. I'll be the first to admit that. I thought they were going to have a really hard time all day long in pass protection. And, look, obviously the tackles, Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran, really did a nice job in that game to only allow one quarterback hit, and it was really not even on them. It was, you know, the quarterback, it was Geno on the long, you know, scramble where he took the sack on third down. That wasn't on the tackles. Obviously, those guys played well, but really, you got to give credit to the offensive coordinator and just the entire offensive coaching staff, offensive line coaches, and the coordinator for, you know, putting them in position to do that. There, a lot of, you know, I think the game plan was designed, obviously, to help those guys out. The play calls were designed to do that. You saw a lot of chipping, and it wasn't like the ball was coming out, you know, bang, bang, like three-step drop, and it was, you know, screen passes and you know, quick-hitting things like that all day. But they weren't putting those guys in, you know, really difficult situations where you're going, you know, deep drop, long developing passing plays. So that's probably the thing I like the most about what he's done is navigating a difficult situation there. They've really got to figure out third down. I mean, otherwise they've been pretty efficient on offense, but you know, the third down thing, and this goes back, you know, two or three coordinators ago, they have not been all that good on third down since I think 2015 was the last time they were better than 16th, as I looked that up the other day. And you know, for everything else, they're doing well on offense. They just, you know, they were 3 of 13. We'll call it 3 of 12 because the last one was a kneel down on Sunday. But, you know, 3 of 12, even when you count the fourth down conversion, 4 of 13, that's not good at all, and that's not sustainable.
I've been really impressed with, obviously, the play of Devin Witherspoon. You're going to get Tariq Woolen here back pretty soon. When you look at that combo, where do you think that duo stacks up against some of the best? And honestly, I look at the New York Jets with DJ Reed over there and Sauce Gardner. Obviously, they're not having the year that everyone expected. But what do you think the potential of that duo is?
Yeah, I don't see why it couldn't be the best duo in the league, even if neither one of those guys end up being the number one guy. Like, I think duo-wise, that there's no reason why it couldn't be the tops in the league when you consider that, you know, Woolen is coming off a Pro Bowl rookie season. And, look, there's always, you know, growth that you can expect, you know, from year one to year two. But I think in his case, the fact that he'd only played cornerback, I think, for three seasons. I think he only has three full seasons as a cornerback under his belt. So when you consider how raw, relatively speaking, he still is and all the physical talent that we know about, like, I think he could, once he gets back on the field, he could take a really significant jump this season. And then Witherspoon, you're just starting to see it there. I know he's had some plays that he wants back, but you see the aggressiveness, you see the willingness to tackle. We hear about the instincts all the time. You know, that play that he had in Detroit where he bites on the flea flicker, I think that was Detroit knowing how aggressive he is and trying to use that against him. So he's got to sort of manage that. But you just see, you know, the play he had, the couple fourth down plays he had in Detroit, then the play early in that game where he comes up and makes a really nice tackle on the edge. And you just see all the tools there. And I think he kind of feels like he's getting ready to make an interception just because he's made some nice plays on the ball. He's been there. And it seems like only a matter of time before he comes down with one of those.
My last question here is just an injury update. Brady, I couldn't quite, you know, get a vibe from Pete Carroll on these two. So for Dre Jones with a hip injury, for Will Disley with a shoulder, he said, you know, they were unsure about Will, unsure about Dre. What's the impression that you get about whether either or both could play in week four?
Yeah, that's what we get paid to do, is try to get a vibe on
right.
What Pete Carroll is saying.
Just try to read between the lines of Pete going, he's got a shoulder.
Yeah, it can be hard to parse. I think part of the difficulty yesterday is that, they, unlike a normal Monday, because they're playing on Monday of next week, those guys weren't in there, and so they didn't really get a chance to examine them on Monday like they normally do after a game. So that may be why some of the reports in general were a little mixed. Yeah, now he did say on his radio show with Brock and Salk that Disley had a good chance of playing, and then he was a little more noncommittal in the afternoon. And then with Trey Brown, that's just impossible to know right now because I don't think, you know, I don't know if Trey Brown was in the building yesterday. And he said he's, you know, it sounds like there's a chance he's going to be back by the end of the week. Certainly, you know, the extra day with the Monday night game helps them, but I think it's way too early to tell with either of those guys.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dre Jones. I might have said Dre Jones. Sorry.
Yeah, I thought you said Dre. Well, my answer is the same on Dre Jones.
Yeah. Okay, that works. Easy enough.
I don't think he had, or anybody really has a good idea of that situation. But again, the Monday night game should help a little bit.
All right. Well, Brady is obviously going to be covering this team, covering these injuries. He'll have updates on Friday from Pete Carroll's press conference. Make sure you're following him ahead of time on Twitter at Brady Henderson. Thanks so much, Brady.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, Stacey. Thank you. See you guys.
All right, again, thank you to ESPN's Brady Henderson joining us for a quick Seahawks update on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to some X's and O's with Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
I love this question. First down, the Dolphins made the Wildcat popular back in the Cadillac William days. What are they doing now that you feel will catch on eventually? And have you seen some of this already with the Seahawks?
You know how this league does. One team does something well, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that. You know how many times I prepare for a team, and I'm watching the defense of the team we're about to play, and I see the team that they played last week do a play. I go, yep, I'm taking that. they couldn't cover
and
it.
I'm
just going to take that. So we're looking at the Dolphins. They just dropped 70 of them things against the Denver Broncos. Now, according to PFF, the Dolphins have a player in motion at the snap at 59% of their plays this season.
Wow.
59%. In 2017, 4% of plays featured a man in motion at the snap. And so far this season, 20% of plays had a man in motion. So I'm looking at what the Dolphins are doing. I go, one, this is what having a man in motion at the snap does to a defense. If a man is in motion and he's running across the formation, if you're not in man, the defense has to communicate and bump over and adjust. Even if you are in man, sometimes the DB or linebacker or whatever will stop and pass his responsibilities over to the next guy. So what that does is stresses out the defense and makes them communicate right until the snap of the ball. And every now and then, someone misses a communication and you get guys in the wrong spot and somebody is wide open. You see that a lot with the Dolphins, especially with a guy like Tyreek Hill that you can put in motion. He's fast as heck. Bam, they're doing it. They're having success. I expect a lot more teams to do that. Now, what I see with the Seahawks, I see pre-snap motion and then we're stopping and getting set. It's kind of like you're going from like a trips right to a 2x2 and then we're set. The one time I can remember, I'm sure they've done it before this year, but the one time I can remember them snapping a ball with a guy in motion was when Tyler Lockett is motioning, say, from right to left. And before he gets to the tackle, he stops, they snap the ball, and he shoots out to the flat. What that does is it bumps the defense over. Now Tyler Lockett, because he's in motion, has the leverage to get to the flat, and it's most likely open. They completed that pass. So, yes, I've seen the Hawks do a bit of this, but I would love to see them do it more. And in fourth down, I'll tell you who they should do it with.
Ooh, wow, look at that tease.
Like that?
Look at that. Do you like that?
Bro.
Second down. What's something you'd like to see change for the Seahawks offense?
Offensively, when you get into that red zone, we got to be nasty when it comes to running the football. So far in the red zone, the Hawks have thrown the ball the sixth most in the NFL, in the red zone. After last week, after seeing what Ken Walker can do, we know what he can do.
Yeah.
After seeing Zach Charbonnet get physical, right? I'm looking at this team and I'm saying, you get into that red zone, be physical. Because you know what that's going to do? It's going to open up the play action. That touchdown to Jake Bobo, play action. Why? Zach Charbonnet's in the backfield and teams are like, look, that man just ran our homie over. We got a gang tackle because he can run. Also, got the tight ends open. Parkinson with big plays. Noah Fant with big plays. You get inside the red zone, run the football and be stubborn early because then all that stuff in the back is going to open up for you. I love the wide receiver fade in the end zone because I'm a wide receiver, but it's a low percentage play. And I think Shane Waldron is in his bag. He's getting creative. He's got guys in motion. He's play action. He's rolling out. Continue that. You get inside the 20, run the football, let Ken Walker and Zach Charbonnet set the tone, and now you can open up and boop, throw it over the top or to the tight end.
It's so fun that it's such a balance offensively because for the longest time, and sometimes unfairly under Daryl Bevel, it was, you guys are so vanilla, you're so vanilla. Now it's, okay, don't get too cute. Don't be too afraid to get back into like the basic tools, you know what I mean, into the basics that you have. And it really is such a balance, and I think some of the best offensive coordinators recognize that, like, nothing that works goes out of style.
Right.
Third down. What's been true about Pete Carroll's philosophy on the way he sees how games are won in the NFL?
So I'm looking at just how the offense progresses throughout the game. And as the game goes along, they get stronger. Now, I know you look at that Rams game and you say, yeah, right, Bump. I'm just looking at the numbers. All right. First quarter, these guys are averaging 4.3 points in that quarter. That's 15th in the league. Second quarter, 6.3, 16th. Third quarter, 6.7, that's fifth. Fourth quarter, 9.7, that's fifth. So you can't win it in the first. You can't win in the second. You can't win in third. You can win it in the fourth. And over the last few games, the team has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger as the game has gone along. If you think about it, against the Detroit Lions, what happens? You come out, Jinnawolsu forces a fumble. Bam, you pick it up, you score. All right, second half last week, you come out, we start getting the tight ends involved more. Ken Walker gets going. So I think Shane Waldron and this offense have figured out a way to take the information that they get in that first half and exploit it in the second half. Also, we're seeing the defense get better, minus the Rams game. I understand that. But the last two, we're seeing the defense get better as the team progresses. They're giving them shorter fields, they're forcing punts, and the offense is opening up the playbook. So I saw those numbers, and the first thing I thought was, this is Pete Carroll's philosophy right here. You can't win it in the first and the second. No, you can't, because you're the 16th ranked offense in those quarters. Now, as the game gets later, as you figure things out, the production goes up. You're fifth in the third and the fourth when it comes to scoring. So Pete Carroll, keep the chant going after you win. You can't win it in the first, second, third, or the fourth. Well, you can't win it in the fourth, actually.
You can win it in the fourth. Can you win it in the fourth? Sometimes. Can you win it in overtime? Sometimes. Sometimes that's true. It is interesting, though, because through the first couple weeks last season, they were the highest scoring offense in the first quarter. And all of us were like, wow, how ironic. Russell Wilson always wanted them to be more aggressive early, and now without him, they're scoring in the first quarter. And now they've kind of veered back to that. Yeah, you don't need to win it in the first.
Just figure them out. Throw some jabs.
So interesting. Fourth down. What can the Seahawks do to get JSN an explosive play? Can I get an explosive play?
Yes, you can. You do what the Dolphins are doing. He should be your motion guy. He should be the guy you never really know what to expect from him, right? You have a profile on Lockett. You got a profile on DK. You know what they're good at. You know what they need to improve on. Because he's so young and fresh, people don't really know what he brings to the table. So I was looking at that Dolphins question in first down, and I'm saying, yeah, JSN should be that guy for the Seahawks. You should put him in motion. Get him the ball while he's in motion. Send him out to the flats. Put him on a screen. We saw a screen last week. I think his one reception was a screen. But more of that. He's your unconventional type of receiver. He doesn't have a role. His role is everything. And as you look at how these offenses are evolving throughout the years and whatnot, one thing is true. If you can run the football, have good tight end play, and then throw in screens and mix it up every now and then, you'll be fine. The Hawks have struggled with the screens, right? So use JSN as that guy. Be creative with him. Be vanilla with Lockett and DK, because we know that they understand coverages and how to get open. But with JSN, you need that Dolphins mentality.
All right. If you think that absolutely no one cares about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, one key NFL stat will prove you wrong. Also, a former Hall of Famer says that he is incredibly tired of watching a current starting quarterback in the NFL. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacy, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. So let's go ahead and start with this one. A former Jets great Super Bowl winning quarterback is not having fun watching this season. Joe Namath was on the Michael Kay Show on ESPN New York and said that he is extremely ready for the Jets to be done with Zach Wilson.
How can a coach make things better for Zach?
How can a coach say the locker room's together? How many teams have we been on? Are you telling me there aren't some cats on the defensive side saying, whoa, man, what's wrong with you? Yeah, there's not all harmony in the locker room. And if there is, they need to get rid of the people. You got to get people in there that are competitors and want to fight to win. These guys don't have to be in love with each other. And if they're saying they're in love with each other, they're BSing you. And you got to get rid of them, top to bottom.
What would you, if somebody handed you Zach Wilson and said, okay, Joe, make him better, what would you do?
Send him to Kansas City to back up against somebody like Mahomes. Maybe he'd learn something. I wouldn't keep him. You know, I've seen enough of Zach Wilson. All right? I've seen enough. Has quick feet, can throw a little bit, but I don't believe what's going on up there.
Yikes.
That's
I've
harsh,
seen
man.
Enough of Zach Wilson.
That's harsh, man. Now, even if he's speaking truth, right? Zach's struggling over there. My boy Zach and my Jets have been struggling. and he has talent. He can throw the football, but something just isn't clicking. And I think this year really hurt him more than it's going to help him, because he was supposed to sit for a year and watch one of the greatest of all time to do it. He was robbed of that experience. So Namath, that was Namath, right? Namath talking about him going to Kansas City and learning would be a great idea. But here's the next thing, too, man. No disrespect to Namath, but he wasn't the greatest quarterback neither. You look at Namath's numbers. I'm not sure why he's in the Hall of Fame. Did he win, the first ever Super Bowl? That's probably why.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like he was a slinger himself. So, you know, Namath, you reach an age where people aren't going to challenge you in anything that you say, and I think that's where he is, and I think anyone that interviews him is not going to do that. But I'm not interviewing him, and I'm going to say Zach Wilson is more talented than what Namath was physically. Now, mental, I don't know. I don't know Namath's games like that when it comes to the physical. But that's harsh, man. That's a young man. You're going super hard on him.
Yep.
You could have gotten your point across without being that harsh on the kid.
I have a question for you and Curtis. Zach Wilson, notoriously now, a number two overall pick. And the Jets presumably wasted that, since he is maybe someone else will tap into this talent in a Tannehill-esque light with another team. But it doesn't look like it's working out with the Jets. So a question for you and Curtis. You two can discuss amongst yourselves or have separate answers. You have a choice of one of these five number two overall picks all time to have as your starting quarterback. You must get to a Super Bowl. Let's pretend that you have the Jets. Let's pretend that you have a really solid team outside of quarterback. Okay. Mm-hmm. You must choose which of these five number two overall picks you want as your quarterback. I want to see if Zach Wilson is the one you end up choosing. Okay, here are your choices.
All right.
Zach Wilson, Carson Wentz, Mitch Trubisky, Marcus Mariota, RG3. Mm. You have to get to a Super Bowl.
I might go Carson Wentz of that group, because he nearly got the Eagles to a Super Bowl.
That was a really good team. You're allowed to have a good team around him.
All right. If he stays healthy, I'm going RG3.
RG3?
If he stays healthy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who's the last name you would pick?
Sam again?
Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson over, would you pick Trubisky or Zach Wilson last? Okay, so it's...
Trubisky led the Bears to a playoff win, I think, or at least a playoff game.
Okay.
He was a Nickelodeon valuable player.
Curtis. okay, here's the number two overall picks, okay? Now, this is only going back
to... Yeah, Carson Wentz of that group, I feel pretty safe.
Carson Wentz has had some ugly interceptions, though.
He's been the best.
That's fair. Carson Wentz, Mitch Trubisky, Zach Wilson, RG3, Marcus Mariota. All number two overall picks.
What made you think of this? This is a good question.
Thank you. I don't know. I was just thinking, obviously there have been number one picks that have been a bust before.
It's a pretty cursed spot to take a quarterback.
That's exactly what it is. All of these guys had guys who were clearly better drafted after them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had guys who were amazing drafted ahead of them. But, these are all... It's the second most valuable pick in the draft. You're finding your franchise quarterback with this guy. And I mean, I could have thrown Darnold in there. I could have thrown some other guys in there.
Uh-huh.
But,
no, I'm looking at RG3, man. When he was healthy, he was something special. I think we forget that because all the subpar years after that. His rookie year, he completed 65% of his passes, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and was a Pro Bowler. That's just throwing the rock. He ran the rock well, too. His second year in the league, he was completed 60%, 3,200 yards, 60 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. The way I would run my offense and the way I would use these guys, I think it is Wentz or RG3. I'm going RG3, though.
Okay. Curtis, you're going Wentz?
Yes.
I'm going Trubisky to prove my excellence as an offensive coordinator and head coach. So people can be like, that's Kyle Shanahan-esque. Stacey Shanahan. Wow, how amazing. Okay, next story here. Auburn head coach Hugh Freeze absolutely refused to believe a fact. He refused to believe that Kirby Smart made the national championship game in his second season, even after Hugh was shown proof by a reporter.
I don't know how long it took him. I don't know what it taken, 3 years or so to get there, or 4 years. I don't know. Some of y'all could do the research, but his second year, I don't know that that's accurate, but anyway, So he did it pretty fast then.
Like,
I got it right here, coach.
I'm going to start doing that when people just disagree with me and they're right. Like when I say something like, oh, the Seahawks rank whatever, and someone's like, actually, Stacey, you know, they're fourth against the run. I'm going to be like, I don't know that that's accurate. But anyways.
I'm going to have to fact check that.
Yeah. I don't know about that one. Coach, I just Googled it. I mean, it's right here in front of you. You can see it. I don't know about that one. Anyways, moving on.
He didn't want to believe it.
Yeah, pretty sure it's the eight, Steve. Big energy of just, I don't know about that. Next story here. I know that what people think is really cool. This is actually not a pet peeve. Like, it doesn't make me mad. It's just more like I laugh. Uh-huh. But some people's favorite thing to do is to find stories on Twitter/X.com and then respond, no one cares. Even though they took time out to respond. This has been happening to a lot of Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift stories. People going, no one cares. I need you to know that if you say that, you are in the minority.
Yeah.
Way too many people care about this story, and I'm kind of okay with it. In fact, this coming out today, Travis Kelce jersey sales have seen a not one, not two, not three, 400% increase since he's been rumored to be seeing Taylor Swift. She has a cult of fans. It is crazy, her influence.
They support her no matter what.
Yo, Swifties ride for Taylor Swift.
Travis Kelce, you, sir, have benefited within weeks
yes.
of being associated with this woman because he gets a percentage of those jersey sales. So good for him.
Well,
I'd keep bringing her around. Keep bringing her around.
Keep bringing her around. Only be careful, Trav. Because here's the deal.
Can't leave her.
You are dating someone so incredibly famous. There's also a viral trend of people telling their husbands that Taylor Swift is going to help with his fame. And the husband's being like, he's the best tight end in football. What are you talking about? She is going to... you might be in too deep right now, Trav. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's only one way this thing works out.
You could
out.
Become a song. It's going to be a killer album.
It's
going to
be a song regardless, whether it's a love song, like you're good, or just, you know what?
Wait.
I'll never date a football player again.
Yeah.
I hate your beard.
Yeah.
Be something like that.
You're in danger.
Hey, enjoy it, though. It's going to be a hell of a ride.
It is. All right. Right now, it's your chance to win two tickets to this Friday's Mariners game. Caller number three at 866-979-3776 will win. If you don't win this hour, don't worry. You'll have another shot during the dugout from 1 to 2 p.m. That's today. You can also win by tuning into Wyman and Bob today from 2 to 6 p.m. They're also going to have your chance to win. Again, caller number three, 866-979-3776. These games are sold out, and we are going to give you a pair. Caller number three, 866-979-3776. Head into the station for Hype Train next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
All right. We are going to take a listen to the latest from Jeff Passan coming up in about 15 minutes. There is one specific cut bump that I am very eager to play you and listeners because I think it speaks to a lot of what both frustrates people when it comes to the Mariners, but could also make you very excited about the future. And I know it seems like I'm reaching and I know it seems like I'm pushing some kind of positivity or whatever, but I think that it's important to look at both sides of it. Because it's a fascinating cut. It's a fascinating take, and I cannot wait to get to it. That's coming up in 15 minutes. Right now, we're heading to the station for Hype Train. Let's go. Oh, Zach Wilson. He is not having a great time in this league right now. Lo and behold, he is off to potentially, if he makes it through this season, playing exactly like he is, the worst three-year span for a starting quarterback in NFL history pretty much ever. I know, it's not great. Joe Namath was on ESPN New York, Michael Kay Show, and said, I've seen enough of Zach Wilson. This is the hype train. We've had a version of it before, but he ended up sticking with him. Zach Wilson will be the Jets starter for the rest of the season.
Nah, that's not going to happen. I'm not jumping on that high train.
Wow, and he's your boy.
He's my boy.
What?
He's my boy. And you got to be honest with your boy sometimes. You know what I mean? You can't just let him believe that he should be shooting his shot. You got to grab him and say, no, you've had too much to drink. That's not what you want to do right now.
I know you want a 10, but look at yourself.
Like, come on now. Look, you got stains.
Best you can do is an 8.
You got stains on your shirt. You just spilled a beer or two. You're not. This isn't going to work out for you.
Stains on your shirt.
So I'm looking at Zach and I go, my man, you've had a pretty good career so far when it comes to money.
But I'm going
to
call you a cat. I'm going to call you an Uber.
$29 million this young man has made so far in his career. And sometimes it's better just to walk away from a situation.
Okay.
So, no, he will not be the starting quarterback. I think that there's too much talent on this team to just let my man, my best friend, actually, Zach Wilson, run him into the ground.
Curtis, the hype train is that Zach Wilson will be the Jets starter for the rest of the season. Bump, despite Zach Wilson being his guy, says, yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
No chance Zach Wilson remains the Jets starting quarterback for the rest of the season. Not boarding that train. I find it wild that the Jets, I mean, I get that they why they let Mike White go, because they picked up Aaron Rodgers and they thought Aaron Rodgers was going to be healthy the rest of the season, but like, Mike White was actually a pretty good backup quarterback. Like, you don't ask your backup quarterback to do much, and he actually got the Jets, I think, a win or two here and there. Like, that, he was a better backup than Zach Wilson was. In fact, Mike White was out there throwing touchdowns against the Broncos defense on Sunday. Heck, any three of us, I think any of us three could have done that against Denver's defense on Sunday. They were so bad. But, yeah, Zach Wilson, not the Jets starter the rest of the season. Not boarding this train.
I am not boarding this train either. I thought about just doing it for fun, but I can't bring myself to do it. Also, because the Jets have signed another quarterback. I'll tell you who it is coming up in NFL headlines at 12:30. Next hype train. It's the return of Jamal Adams for the first time since week one, 2022. It has been over a year since Adams has stepped foot on a football field. He did not participate in the preseason. He did not participate in training camp, but he is back in action, ready to go against the Giants in primetime. This one on the road, Monday Night Football, and he will have a sack in his first return to the field since last year.
It would be poetic because he hurt himself week one.
Yeah.
When he almost had a sack.
Yep.
Right. And then you saw him just pull up. Something went wrong. So it would be poetic. And my son is taking a class in poetry now. So we talk about poetry a lot. And just because of that connection, I'm going to say, yeah, let's say he gets a sack. It's going to be poetic. And my son write a poem about it.
Yes. Okay.
Jamal, pressure. Quarterback. Come
yeah,
back.
You got it. Jamal Adams will have a sack in his first return to the field since week one, 2022. Bump is boarding this train. He said, I learned some important lessons about poetry, and that sure would be poetic. Curtis, are you boarding this train?
All the poets that I know, you know, you got to have just a rhyming scheme. So we're going to continue with this. We're going to try to continue with this. Jamal Adams, touchdown. Gives a frown.
A receiving touchdown?
Jamal Adams' touchdown makes Daniel Jones frown.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Crown the Seahawks with a victory. Wow. Yeah, I think it's a scoop and score. Jamal Adams does get a sack
thank you
a touchdown all in one play.
Thank
so I'm
for
boarding
walking
the train.
It back. I apologize
for
the radio that I've created over the last couple minutes here. I'm going to go ahead and board this train. I think that Jamal Adams is strikes me as someone who, once you start playing, you are all in it. Also, really important to note another angle of this, returning to his original home stadium for the first time in his career, there's going to be kind of this added fire there, I think. And I think he's a player that fully embraces that. Next and final hype train into the station. We are looking around the rest of the league, this time at the AFC East, and we are going all the way to Miami. The Dolphins will finish with the best record in the AFC.
Welcome to Miami. They hot over there. 70 points last week. They got the Bills, the Giants, the Panthers, the Eagles, the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Jets, the Commanders, the
Tomatoes,
Titans, the Jets,
tomatoes,
the Cowboys, the Ravens, the Bills. I'm looking at that schedule, and they got a head start. What, the Chiefs have lost one, the Bengals have lost two, and those are your main competitors out there in the AFC. So I'm going to board that train and say, look, they got a good thing going. Guys got to stay healthy, especially Tua, because he makes this whole thing go. If that can go down, it's going to happen. I'm going to put good vibes out there. It's going to happen. Get it done, Tua.
Hype train, Miami Dolphins will finish with the best record in the AFC. Lots of talent in that conference. Bump is boarding. Curtis, are you?
Yeah, two games remaining against the Bills. They go on the road at Philly October 22nd. That's going to be a crazy atmosphere. At home against Kansas City. Actually, no, that's potentially the game of the year. Dolphins-Chiefs is going to be, I believe, in Munich, Germany. That's
love
a 6:30 a.m. kickoff. Still, that's going to be a pretty crazy game. I think if you're going to finish with the best record in the conference, you can't lose more than three games. I think I still see 3 to 4 losses for Miami, so I'm not going to board this train until Kansas City gets knocked off. Remember, Patrick Mahomes has never played a road playoff game before.
That's insane.
Ever.
In 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years as a starter. He has never once played a road playoff game.
Look at that.
I think that streak continues until somebody says otherwise. The Dolphins are going to be a really good team this year, but I think there is going to be opportunity for them to get knocked off.
Well, thankfully, there's no more opportunity for you to make poems about Jamal Adams' return in week 4 from the 253. Curtis rhyming like B-Rabbit at the beginning of 8 Mile. All right, you guys.
I'm sweaty.
We have getting back to the Mariners. Jeff Passan explains why he thinks the Mariners have faltered in September and also tells us what every single Mariners fans and Mariners ownership need to understand about the Rangers. That's coming up next.